Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Since starting to incorporate Magic Spoon cereal into my daily morning routine, I have noticed fewer cravings throughout the day. 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. Only 140 calories a serving. It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, low-carb. Available flavors to build your custom-owned bundle are cocoa, fruity, frosted, peanut butter, cookies and cream, maple waffle, blueberry, cinnamon, plus the newly reformulated super tasty honey nut flavor. Get your delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/onion and use the code ONION to save $5. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
Harmonize with me and hold me tight all through the night. You're shining bright. I'm your oyster, baby. You're my pearl.
Hello! We're here. Well, I'm here.
My good friend, Dominic.
This is confusing, Billy, because I'm here as far as I know, but for some reason you're there. Now, where's there?
Well, where I am, I'm here and you're there.
No, I thought I was here, but go on. This is confusing.
But this is a problem not for us. That's for the quantum physicists. That's... We'll get one of them back on soon.
I mean, are we even anywhere?
But I tell you where I am, Dom.
Yeah.
I'm in Canada, of all places.
Aha, land of the Mountie.
It's very cold outside, but it's very hot in this room.
Oh.
I had the air conditioning on there.
Yeah.
But the people, the good people of Cass told me it was too loud, so I had to switch it off. So I may have to remove my clothes at some point.
Perfect. I think there's a lot of people out there that will love that. And I would say just embrace it. Just enjoy it. You've got a fantastic body like a Greek god. So go for it. Well, let me ask you this, Billy, because you and I spend a huge amount of time in hotel rooms and a huge amount of time traveling. Talk me through when you check into a hotel, whether that be for pleasure or business. You put your key card in, you put your bag down in the hotel room. Tell me what happens for the next 10, 15 minutes. What do you do?
I find the toilet.
Good.
The bathroom.
Yeah.
And I have a look to see if it's got a bath.
Mm-hmm, you're a bath
because
man.
I love a bath, Dom. Mm-hmm. And I know some people who would never take a bath in a hotel because they feel like other people have been in that bath and all that. Doesn't bother me.
Right.
I love it.
Okay.
In fact, if I'm totally honest, Dom,
please.
I had a bath today.
Lovely.
Right before I came on to say hello. And it's a nice one. It's deep.
Oh, deep, yeah, deep bath. Yeah, you've sent me some lovely videos from deep baths over the years, and I've enjoyed them.
You can share them at some point.
Let's do it. Do you sluice the bath down, though, before you get in for the first time? Do you give it a cursory kind of soaping down of the surfaces?
Do you know what? I just trust that that's been done.
Oh, God.
I just fill it up.
Oh, God.
I fill it up with water that's just overly too hot.
Yeah.
To the point, you know, where you can just get in.
Yeah.
You know, when you lower your arse and you think, oh no, it's too much, my arse will never take this. But then it just does. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you gotta lull yourself
in. To the point, sometimes I'll add a little bit of cold, just enough, and I'll bring it up to my legs, up to my thighs, just enough to get me so I can sink in.
Brilliant.
Oh, and it's too hot, Dom. It's too hot and I'm sweating. I love it. With nice music playing.
Yeah, you like that. Glass of wine, light some candles. I remember that being almost half your existence in New Zealand. I would call you and you'd say, I'm in the bath. I'll call you back in half an hour. I can't remember.
Still is.
I can't remember the last time I had a bath. I think maybe the last time I had a bath was in my 30s. Certainly not in my 40s. To each his own. To each his own.
Well, you know, maybe one day. So that's the first thing I do.
Yeah.
And then I test out the bed.
Yeah.
And then I find out where I'm going to put my suitcase, you know, where, because it's just going to sit there. I'm not going to unpack it, if I'm honest with myself.
Right, okay.
The The suitcase is going to sit in some corner until I leave that hotel room. And then I have a look in all the any doors or drawers for, like, you know, there might be a little secret fridge with, like, you know, little snacks and drinks in it.
Right, a pathway to Narnia, possibly. You never know.
Right at the back of the wardrobe, yeah.
Yeah. I like to, when I get into a hotel room, because I'm not a bath man, so it's not my thing, I like to grab the remote control, grab the kind of guide, as it were, to the hotel room, see what channels we've got, and then scroll through to the channel that I think is going to be the most interesting for a while. And once I put that on, I go directly to the room service menu and I try and work out, okay, so what's going to be the next two or three nights' meals if I have to do it? If I'm not going to go out for dinner somewhere, if it's too late, if I'm working, what would I have? And I go, oh, right, I'll have the tortellini tonight and then I'll have the prawns tomorrow night and then, oh, I'll have the tomato and basil soup. Perfect. That's my first 45 minutes to an hour in my hotel room.
Well, you're a planner, Dom. You're a planner.
I know, I know.
You always have been.
Yeah, it's true.
You like to organise. You like to know what's going on. And I like that.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't even know what the room... I don't even know if there is room service in this. I wouldn't even know where you would find it.
Right. Now, do you do this thing? I'm sure you do it as a smart, intelligent man. But here's my little top tip. Not for you, because I'm sure you do it. But just for people in general when they're staying in a hotel room. When you leave your hotel room for the first time, when you've checked in, turn around and take a photo of the number of your hotel room. Because I can't tell you how many times you'll go down all, you know, carefree, whatever, and then you'll come back from dinner late at night and you'll think, I've no idea what room I'm in. I could be in room 712, I could be in room 217. And then you check your phone and it gives you a little bit of info. So there's my top tip if you're checking into a hotel.
That is a good tip, actually. Mm. I'm going to use that because I've done that before, Tom. Yeah. I've not got the best memory for things like that. You know, like sometimes you can forget where you're parked. You go to a car park and you forget and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
One time I went to a supermarket and I parked my car and I went in and I got all my shopping, got all the stuff that I needed, went outside, got a taxi, went home, and then the next morning I got up and I was like, where's my car? And it took me about 3 or 4 hours to remember I'd went to the supermarket the other day and left the car in the car park.
My God. But do you often take a taxi to the supermarket? Was that a common practice?
No.
To and from? Well, why? Wait, Billy, that is, if you don't mind me saying, crazy. So normally you would drive to do your shopping. For some reason, on this particular day, you came out and went,
taters,
get a taxi.
I'd forgotten I had a car.
Oh, come on. That's crazy speak.
Peeling the onion.
I can't understand how you would go through that practice. But hey, that's what makes the world go round. Well, listen, Billy, you're there. I'm here. We have to do a little bit of housekeeping very quickly because we've got a fantastic guest today. Shall I read this first?
Oh, you're excited about our guest. I know you are.
Excited about our guest because it really is my kind of wheelhouse. And, you know, you're interested in those type of things too. But, hey, I'm going to start with a letter that we've got here. Well, actually, a message on our YouTube channel, The Friendship Onion, from Lost Lollipop in regards to imposter syndrome, who said, regarding imposter syndrome, it's not just about feeling you don't deserve your accolades, but also convincing yourself you're a fraud. I'm a grown woman, just a few years younger than Dom, and often have moments where I'm in a business meeting where I know for a fact I'm the most knowledgeable person in the room in my specific field and still have the feeling that at any moment someone might jump up and go, aha, you're not a real grown-up, you're just pretending. Okay, so a little bit more information there about what imposter syndrome is.
I think most people get a little twinge of that sometimes.
I mean...
You know, I feel like we're all still children, you know, inside these adult bodies. And there's moments when you think, ooh, you know, am I really, you know, is my job, do people believe that I do that kind of thing?
Right, right, yeah.
I feel like that. Anyway, you see, you've never had a twinge of that, have you?
Well, I don't think I have, but when you explain it like that, have I been in situations where I've thought they're going to, or when... Lost Lollipop here has said they're going to say, you're not a real grown-up, you're pretending. I wonder if I've had that where maybe I'm on stage giving a talk about something, or, you know, when you go to colleges or universities talking about acting, and you think someone's going to go, you know, well, what do you know? What makes you an expert in this field type thing? So, yeah, so maybe a little bit.
Yeah, so you, even you. Dom, what about this? We've got some misheard lyrics. I know we always like that when people think a song is saying something else. So Joey Henderson from YouTube, he says, my brother sings Tina Turner's What's Love Got to Do with It as, what's love got to do with it? Got to do with it. What's love but a second hand with lotion?
Should we try it?
What's love got to do with it?
What's love but a second hand with lotion? Oh, that works quite well, actually.
It works. It works an absolute treat, Tom.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Thanks,
Joey. Well done, Joey Henderson, and your brother. Thank you. So if you've got any misheard lyrics, please send them in. We love those. Kevin C. from Ireland says, hello, Dom and Billy. Firstly, I'd like to thank you both for this amazing show. It's the only podcast I listen to week in, week out, religiously.
Oh.
Tying both of your love of music and The Lord of the Rings together, my question for you both is, you are both in Middle-earth and setting up a band. Which Lord of the Rings characters do you want to make up your band, assuming that they could play an instrument? And what role would they have in the band, and what would your band be called?
Wow, that is a lot. That's a lot to think through. I mean, should we do this
forming a band, isn't it?
Should we do this together, Bill? Should we create one band, two of us? Well, can I just put it out there immediately, because this was a knee-jerk reaction? I'm going to say Sauron on drums. Does that sound about right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think, that's a good, that's like a Bonham drummer, isn't it? That's a Zeppelin drummer, that.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of power.
Yeah, a lot of power. All right, so that's a good start.
Could we put you on piano? I always like to see you sitting at a piano. You sort of lose yourself in a piano, I find.
Yeah, I'm a little penis. Let's do it.
I've always enjoyed you tickling the ivories.
Of course you have.
I think for the PR guys, they would if Galadriel was the singer, I think they'd love that for the posters and the album covers and that, you know.
I like
quite
that.
Quite enigmatic and quite interesting.
Yeah, I like that.
What about
That's
guitar?
A good shout. Guitar, could we go with Gimli on bass?
Oh, Gimli on bass for sure. Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah,
and then
lead. We're looking for someone, you know, charismatic but maybe a bit mysterious. Is that a kind of Faramir or an Eomer type vibe?
Yeah,
yeah, Faramir maybe.
Now, do you know who I would put, Dom? You know who I'd put?
Yeah,
and on lead guitar. Frodo.
Okay.
I think he'd be a shoegazer. I think he'd just be there trying to get it right. And you just enjoy watching him with those big eyes. His hair's nice. Frodo on lead guitar, I think.
I like that. Can we add an extra? He doesn't really do any. I think that's a great band. Can we add an extra? He doesn't really do anything. He's a little bit like Bez from the Happy Mondays, kind of comes in with maracas or a tambourine. Can we have Gollum do that?
Oh, yeah, that'd be good. Just a character for the band.
Yeah, because him and Frodo would probably interact quite well. And then what about a name for the band? We're not in the band, by the way, but that's okay. What about a name?
That's all right. We'll be the Roadies. We'll have a great thing.
Yeah, wicked, yeah.
We'll be the thingy. The Wooded Road.
Oh, that's fantastic, Billy. Love that. Great work.
It's all right, that, isn't it?
Thank you, Kevin C.
There you go. There's the band. I've got something amazing to tell you about. Olipop. It is a new soda, and I'm here to tell you it is amazing. And not only is it not bad for you, it's actually good for you. Yes, good for you. And it tastes amazing. They've got all sorts of flavours. Like, they've got vintage cola, classic root beer, orange squeeze, cherry vanilla, strawberry vanilla. They're amazing. I couldn't even pick my favourite. Every one I tried, I liked better than the one before. They use functional ingredients that combine prebiotics, plant fibre and botanicals, which actually means they're good for you, good for digestive health. and they've got virtually no sugar compared to like a normal Coca-Cola, which has got like 39 grams of sugar. Their vintage cola has got like 2 grams. I mean, it's amazing and it tastes incredible. You can receive 20% off plus free shipping on your order. I recommend trying the variety pack. Like I say, all the flavours are amazing. Go to drinkolipop.com/onion or use the code onion at checkout to claim this deal. That's drinkolipop.com/onion. Olipop can also be found in over 8,000 stores across the country, including Kroger, Target, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and Wegmans. Olipop, it is really magic. Need to supercharge your hiring? Well, you need a super hiring partner. You need Indeed. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, you can interview, and you can hire all in one place. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites, searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed is a powerful hiring partner that can help you do it all. Find great talent faster through time-saving tools like Indeed's Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. Like with Instant Match, over 80% of employers get quality candidates whose resume on Indeed matches their job description the moment they sponsor a job, according to Indeed Data US. So start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/onion. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/onion. Indeed.com/onion. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, so our very exciting guest this week, Billy, because you know how much of a self-professed animal and specifically insect nerd I am, is Richard Zeck, who is an entomologist. There's an amazing amount of stuff here, information about Richard. Says here, graduate faculty professor, associate entomologist and extension specialist, director of the M.T. James Entomological Collection. Wow, Richard, it's very nice to have you on the show.
Great. Well, thank you for inviting me today. I was been looking forward to it.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, good, good.
Now, Richard, we do have a bunch of information about you, which we can read.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Doubt, but we always prefer to hear from the guests themselves. It makes it a little bit more personal, and we'd love to know about how you became so interested in insects to the extent that you now teach classes about them in university.
Great. So when I was a youngster, I went to university. I started at Ohio State University. And I had always been interested in biology. I had snakes and salamanders and lizards and all kinds of things. But I knew nothing about insects. So when I went to the university, I met a professor, and he talked about, you know, well, if you ever want to get a job, one good field is entomology, because insects do a lot of bad things that people don't like. So there are always people that want to figure out how to control insects. So I took a course. I thought it was the greatest course I'd ever taken in my life. I took more courses. Eventually, I graduated. And I said, well, what can I do with this degree in entomology now? And there were things, but in order to do what I really wanted to do was to study, do research, and really teach about insects, I went to graduate school. I took more courses that I thoroughly enjoyed and kept going. And eventually I received a PhD in entomology and have spent the past 35 years or so working on insects, teaching about insects, have graduate students, undergraduate students, and it has been just a fantastic life. There is There's no group out there that is more exciting and interesting than insects.
Hear, hear. I totally agree.
I'm absolutely sure that Dom would agree with you there. Yeah. His favorite animals, and he could talk to you all day. He talks to me all day about insects, so I'm sure you two together would be.
They do everything. I mean, there's an insect, does everything.
Right. I think for me, Richard, it's the fact that, I mean, I'm obsessed with animals, but the great thing about insects for anyone out there is if you are interested in animals, they're right there. They're always there. They're less than a minute or so away from you having an interaction with them, whether that be with a magnifying glass or putting them on your hand or, you know, seeing them out in nature. And as a kid growing up, same as you, I kept lizards, I kept snakes, I kept different animals, but I with my brother, but I always wanted to be consistently having interactions with different animals, and going into my mum and dad's garden and picking up rocks, it was like Christmas morning. I just felt every time I would roll over a rock, I'd be like, oh, what is it today? And it was so exciting. There's so much to learn. And I think, unfortunately, they do get a bad rap, insects, alongside arachnids, and I'm always attempting to educate people on the idea that they don't even though they can be destructive and they can feel like they're moving into our world quite a lot, they don't know that they're doing that. They don't know that they're annoying you. They don't have a concept of that. They're just finding a place that's warm. They're finding a place that has food, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like any type of animal, They're just trying to survive. They're just trying to make a living. They're just trying to do what they naturally do. And most of the time, it's actually us that's intruding into their world more than they're intruding into our world, for the most part. Right. And, you know, and I think for the most part, we can figure out how to live with insects, arachnids, all different types of arthropods. I agree with you there. It's amazing, because all you have to do is open the back door, go out, look through the vegetation, pick up some rocks, look under some bark, and there are going to be insects out there. And once you learn a little bit about them, you're going to learn that they're doing fantastic things, that they're talking to each other. They're communicating. They're finding food in ways that, you know, you never thought about. They're models for all kinds of television shows, like the Borg from Star Trek and stuff. I mean, anything that you want to look at, you can find an insect and study it in that group of insects.
Yeah, Billy's interested now. You said the word Star Trek. Billy's like, oh, hang on a second.
Wait a minute. Star Trek, not only Star Trek, but my favorite alien race in Star Trek, the Borg.
Yep.
I love the Borg. Yeah. So do you mean that sort of hive mentality? Is there an insect that works that way? That if one knows something, somehow it gets transferred to all of them?
Yeah, so exactly. So if you look at what we call a lot of social insects, like honeybees would be a great example. Ants are a great example. Within that colony, there's usually one that's in control, and we tend to call that one the queen. She kind of controls it. But what she's doing is she's sending out messages, and most of those messages are chemical messages that all the other ants, all the other bees are picking up, and then they work in concert with each other to accomplish certain types of goals. So kind of like the Borg, I'm not sure if the Borg had an individual that controlled things. I think they were more, you know, they worked.
They did. There's the queen.
I don't know, but yes, that's exactly how it works in a lot of those insects. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Here's this might be a silly question. This might be a silly one, but I'm allowed the silly ones because Dom can ask you the real ones. But I read somewhere that, talking about bees, that bees can take too much pollen or whatever it is they're doing, and they can get drunk. And there's guys on the hive who are like the bouncers, and they don't let them into the hive if they're drunk. Is there any truth in that? Because I thought that was a brilliant story, if it is.
So I'm not sure if that story is 100% accurate, but so they can they get drunk? Yes, So, you know, now we gotta figure that, you know, we're talking about insects, we're using your human terminology and stuff. Mm. But yeah, if you think about it, a lot of those insects, they're going out and they're looking for sugary substance and stuff. And so, I mean, if they're coming and they're drinking wine, which they will do, you know, take some wine, put it on the table in the summer, and the bees will come in and drink it and stuff. Will they get drunk? Yes, they will get, you know, drunk, I'm not sure is the right word. Now, when they go back to the hive, I don't know if there are anybody, you know, checking at the door to make sure that they're not inebriated or something. But yes, that certainly happens. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, Rich, but I'm going to keep believing that because it's just my favorite story.
Okay, it's a good one.
I kept bees for a couple of years on my property, and my beekeeper friend, Bruce, was telling me that there are, what in terms of what Billy was referring to there, what he called bouncer bees. And the bouncer bees make sure that the entranceway and the exit way is not crowded with bees, you know, that there's an easy path in, an easy path out. I wonder if what Billy's alluding to there is maybe there's an overly excited bee that's had way too much nectar, or like, as you said, they've been drinking beer or drinking wine, and the bouncer bee kind of says, go have a fly for 35 minutes and come back when you're feeling a little more well-behaved, you know. Let me ask you this, Rich, because this is one of the things that I'm always trying to come up with the right information or the right answer for people when there's a disconnect I always find in the natural world, and especially if we kind of zoom into insect life, where humans are under this strange assumption that if an animal is directly beneficial to them, then it's good, quote unquote. And if an animal doesn't seem to do anything that they notice for them, then it's bad. A good example of that might be that people say, oh, well, bees are good. They make honey. We eat honey, you know, protect the bee. But wasps are bad. Wasps sting and they don't do anything. And I always try and point out, well, you know, wasps are pollinators too. And they also eat animals that eat a lot of fruits and vegetables and stuff. When you find this situation with people, you know, getting educated about insects, how do you try and attack that? The answer to that question of like, this is a good animal, this is a bad animal, which doesn't really exist, does it?
No, it doesn't exist. So good and bad are concepts that we're putting onto those animals. They are good for us for some reason. So you're right. Honeybees pollinate plants. That's really good. You know, half of the food that we eat, we need bees to pollinate those plants. Butterflies are good because they're beautiful and we like to look at them. You know, but other insects are bad because they bite us, they sting us, they transmit some disease to us. But that's a human concept. The insects are only doing what they've evolved to do. Right. And so, like every animal, every living being, they're fitting into to basically what we call their niche. This is what their existence is all about. And to them, it's not good or bad. It has nothing to do with that. It's their ability to exist, to do what they need to do to survive, just like all animals and plants do for that purpose, and then to move on, to leave another generation. Yeah.
So in your studies of insects, Rich, you know, in getting a degree and then getting a PhD and then teaching people over the years, what specific insects became your expertise? What's your kind of niche market in the insect world?
So I actually, my specialty area is a group of very small flies that are kind of semi-aquatic. So the flies themselves live around water. They, most of them lay their eggs in or near the water, and their immatures, their larvae, feed on algae in the water, bacteria, different types of things like that. But the reason I got into this group was because they live in very, very different types of habitats. So these fly larvae, actually, I don't know if either of you have ever visited the Great Salt Lake. Okay. Yeah. The Great Salt Lake is very alkaline, very, very saline. Nothing can live in there because it's so saline, except the immatures of one of these flies. Hot springs. Nothing can live in those hot springs because they are so hot, except one of these flies. There's actually one of these species that lives in pools of crude petroleum.
Wow.
And so I just thought, what, you know, how interesting biologically this group is. And so that was the one that became my primary group. I tend to work on insects that live in or near water. And then what, for the last couple of years, what I've been doing is looking at insects that live in unusual types of habitats. So those would be unusual types of habitats, but insects that live in places and do things that give us information on maybe why we need to protect that habitat. Insects are really good indicators of changes that are going on in the environment. We can study insects and we can basically predict changes that would be very difficult to do. So that's one of the areas that I look at now are changes in insects, insect species, insect populations and stuff over time to predict on whether a habitat is there are changes going on there that we need to look at, or is this a habitat that contains a lot of different insects that we don't find anyplace else? We need to preserve that habitat because it is very different for us. And so, you know, and that might be a national park is created or some type of preserve or something. So insects really provide us with a tremendous amount of information.
Oh, Rich, I just want to be sat next to you on a long-haul flight and bend your ear for like 11 hours.
Yeah, I'd love that. Yeah.
It's fascinating to hear that.
We'd have a lot of questions for each other. Yeah.
Guys, I just finished in the gym. And like anyone else, trying to keep healthy, I'm trying to cut down on my sugars, trying to cut down on my carbs. And I'm always looking to get a little bit of protein into my diet after the gym, which usually is a protein shake. Maybe I'll have a protein shake today, but I'm also going to have a lovely, tasty bowl of my favorite cereal, Magic Spoon. Let me give you a little bit of a stat rundown here. 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. Only 140 calories a serving. It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, low-carb, and you can also build your own box. Available flavors to build your custom-owned bundle are cocoa, fruity, frosted, peanut butter, cookies and cream, maple waffle, blueberry, cinnamon, plus the newly reformulated super tasty honey nut flavor will now be added to Magic Spoon's permanent collection simply because it tastes so good. And this is a brilliant thing to eat if you want to have a little midnight snack. So go to magicspoon.com to grab a custom bundle of cereal and be sure to use the promo code ONION at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with 100% guaranteed happiness. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, get your delicious box of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/onion and use the code ONION to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
And I see that you teach two specific courses here at your university. One's called Insects and People, A Perspective, and the other one is Insect and Human Health. So could you just briefly give us an overview of both of those things? Because they seem really interesting as well.
So at the university, all students have to take a certain number of biology courses or, you know, science courses, literature and that. So I teach courses that are designed for students that are afraid of biology. They're afraid of science. And what I try to do is I use insects to teach about scientific principles because most students know about insects. Most students don't like insects. And so what I try to do is work with them throughout the semester so that at the end of the semester, they may still not like insects, but they appreciate them. They appreciate science now. They appreciate how the world actually works. And then in my second course, which is basically a medical entomology course, what I do is in there, I talk a lot about how insects, through the vectoring of diseases, have really influenced human history basically since the start of humans. You know, we think about things or maybe we don't think about things. And this is what I try to get across to the students, like the plague. Okay, the bubonic plague, this great disease that has occurred throughout history that's destroyed, you know, 25% of the human population at the time. Well, how has that affected? Yes, a lot of people died. We understand that. But how does that affect basically the evolution of humans? How did it change cultural and you know, the cultural aspects of humans and stuff. Mm. How, you know, how did these diseases affect us in the United States, in Europe, in Africa? Mm. Why is Africa a place where there's not been a lot of development? Okay. And one of the reasons is, I would argue one of the main reasons is because there are so many insect vector diseases there, such as malaria, that if you're spending most of your time just trying to survive, you don't have a lot of time to, you know, to do some of the things that we can do in what we sometimes call the more developed nations. Mm. So I try to get that across to the students. Mm.
I mean, I guess you could put a strong argument forward to say that the mosquito is probably the most influential animal ever to affect human evolution. I mean, the amount of people that the mosquito has killed over the years, more than all the wars combined, all the tragedies combined, it's an incredibly influential animal.
And even today, you know, the most dangerous animal on Earth is the mosquito.
Yeah.
Because of the diseases that it still vectors today. Yes.
Right.
No question.
I mean, I love insects. Yeah. I love all animals. You know, I respect and admire the tenacity of the mosquito. It is one of the only animals that I will kill on site if I'm in a hotel room and I'm trying to sleep. And I'll hold my hand up to that. I am an animal lover, but there's a couple of animals that if I see it, unfortunately, it's dying. One of them is a mosquito. If I'm in a room without a mosquito net, if I've got a mosquito net, I'm okay with it. The other one, unfortunately, is the fungus gnat, which if you get a fungus gnat in your house and it starts to affect your houseplants, it will kill all of your houseplants over the course of about 6 months. And it's a horrible death for the houseplants. It eats the roots and rots the roots, basically. If I see a fungus gnat in my house, unfortunately, it's getting smashed. Sorry.
So why does the mosquito in particular carry all that disease? Why not other, you know, flying insects? Or
so there are other insects that vector diseases. Fleas vector diseases. Fleas are the vector of plague. But what mosquitoes do is you have mosquitoes out there. Male and female mosquitoes. Only female mosquitoes actually take blood because they need blood to produce offspring. And what they do, so the vectoring of diseases is incidental to their blood feeding habitat. They go to an animal host, let's say it's a human. When they feed on that human, what the female mosquito will do is, and everybody knows this, she sticks her mouth parts into the body. She actually has a way of finding a little vein or artery. And what she does is she will suck out a couple drops of blood. What most people don't realize is that when she places her mouth parts into the body, it's not like one needle. With people, I call them straws. It's not like one straw going in and she's just sucking out milkshake blood. Mm-hmm. What she's doing is she's putting two straws in, two needles in. The first thing that she does is she injects saliva into the wound. The saliva keeps the blood from coagulating, and the second straw, part of the mouth part, literally just sucks the blood up. So the way that they move germs, let's just call them germs, viruses, et cetera, from person to person, is if she sucks my blood and I have some of that disease in me, the germ that causes that disease, when she flies to you, the first thing that she does is take some of her saliva that may contain some of my blood, that may contain some of the disease, and she puts it into you now. You get the disease. And all of that is just incidental to her need to take blood meals.
Yeah, it's not something that the mosquito is doing on purpose. It's a parasite almost that lives in the mosquito.
So the biologies are tremendously complicated.
Yeah, they're very, I mean, they're obviously a hated animal, the mosquito, from the very base level of it bit me and it itches, all the way up to, like you said, Rich, some of these awful diseases that unfortunately kill people. I've had dengue. I had dengue in Peru, and it was one of the worst things that I've ever had. It's certainly like the worst kind of sickness virus I think I've ever had. I mean, I was hallucinating. I was so ill with it.
So that was a mosquito that gave you dengue.
Right, yep. Right. It was just one of the few ones that unfortunately I wasn't able to smack before I went to sleep at night. But there we go. I mean, I organize a lot of my holidays around animals. You know, when I go to places on my own on a trip, it's usually geared around trying to find a specific animal and then all the other things that might be living in the same place as that animal. Very often it's an invertebrate or certainly an insect, because I'm obsessed. I also just, I've always been such a fan of knowledge and of understanding the kind of highly sophisticated natural world. And in doing that, what I really love about gaining that knowledge is you become almost like a detective, like an animal detective, because, you know, if I'm in a country where, let's say, there's a beetle I've never seen before and an ant that I've never seen before, and they seem to be in some way interacting in a way that I can't make sense of, because of my base level understanding of how ants work and my base level understanding of how beetles might work, I can then start to deduce, I think the ant might be doing this. And if that's the case, then I should be able to walk around this corner and see another ant doing the same thing. And it's one of my favorite things is making an assumption in the animal world based on a base level of knowledge and then following through with that hypothesis and having it be improved by the behavior of the animal. I love that. I love that happening.
Yeah. And I mean, basically, you just describe science.
Right.
That's what science is all about.
Right.
Yep.
If I could, I left college before I got my qualifications, because I started acting when I was 18. My plan was to go to drama college after that, but I never did it because I started working. But my father was a teacher. My brother is still a teacher. I come from a family of teachers and educators. And I'd always wanted to get a degree in entomology in some sort of open university thing. I think even though ants are probably my all-time favorite insect, and after that probably mantids and beetles, I think if I were to get a degree in entomology, the animal that I would study now would be the housefly, because they're ubiquitous.
Housefly?
Yeah, and their interaction with humans is so intimate. You know, they live in our houses, they eat our food, they sleep where we sleep, type thing. And also the life cycle is so fast. I find the common housefly, Musca domestica, just absolutely fascinating.
So I have a question for you guys. Where in the Lord of the Rings is an insect actually used for a very definite purpose?
Would that be Gandalf and the Moth?
Gandalf and the Moth. Okay.
Yeah. Was that the correct answer?
Yes, that was the correct answer. Is that what you had, Billy?
No, I was thinking about your speciality there, Rich. The midgewater marshes.
Ah, there's another one.
I was going to say.
Okay. Yeah, and there could be, but and it's interesting because I don't know who came up with that for the movie.
Yeah.
But culturally, especially in Native American populations and throughout a lot of human culture, moths were used as messengers from the gods to come down and actually talk and deliver messages to people.
Mm.
And really? That's what happened there. And so, again, I'm not sure who wrote that in, but they must have had some little entomological background to them. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm sure it's in the book. I'm sure Tolkien has it in the book, right, Dom?
Yeah, it's in the book.
I don't
for
know
sure.
if Tolkien has it in the book or not.
I think it is. I think it is, because I remember it being quite a vivid memory for me, unless I'm blurring it with the movie, but I seem to recall it being in there. While we're on the subject of moths, Rich, because this is one of the common questions that I get asked, and it would be a great thing for you as a true expert to answer this. Can you just explain to people who are confused as to why moths seem to be obsessed with light bulbs? Just explain what is actually going on for the moth there.
Yeah, so that's a really good question that I wish I had a really good answer to. Realistically, there are probably several answers. One of them is that when a moth finds itself in some place that it needs to escape from, what it does is it looks for some type of light source. So if it's buried down in something, if there's a light source and it flies towards that, that is going to get it out of this situation that it's in. Mm-hmm. And so what we have here is kind of an artifact. You put your porch light on at night, you know, insects are not perceiving that as a porch light or anything. It triggers in them a behavior, a flight behavior, that they just fly towards that light.
Don't moths also navigate by the light of the moon? Isn't that a way that they move around the planet? So are they,
you know, there's probably some of that. There's probably some of that, but not, it would not be a primary way that they would do it.
What makes an insect an insect? And what makes an insect? Yeah, an insect.
Okay. So an insect is an animal that has an exoskeleton, so an outside skeleton. An insect is what we call a segmented animal, and Dom probably knows all. So it consists of actually segments, but in insects, those segments are combined into units, what we call a head, a thorax, and an abdomen. So three functional units that we only find in insects. And then there are other little characteristics too, but basically a segmented animal with an exoskeleton that is divided into three body segments.
Right.
Yeah.
Six legs as well, right? Six legs.
Yep. And six legs. Yep. Six legs. Yeah. And so if you think about something like a spider, well, a spider is not an insect. It's in this group we call the arthropods. So indeed, a spider has an exoskeleton, but it's divided into two body segments and has eight legs. And then, you know, I know Dom has some interesting other critters at home, I think, that are variously, they're arthropods, but they're variously divided into segments and legs and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a variety of different isopods, or as one of the animals out there that has a variety of different names around the world. I think in Britain, they're called woodlouse. In certain parts of the world, they're called roly-polies or pill bugs. Pill bugs. I think some people call them potato bugs, which is obviously a misnomer because it's obviously a different type of potato bug. But scientifically known as an isopod, right? Now, they aren't insects because they have more than six legs and they don't have a head, thorax, and abdomen. And aren't they also slightly more associated with water kind of shrimp life than insects?
Yeah, So crustaceans are an arthropod, okay, but the ones that you just talked about are what we call terrestrial crustaceans. They live on the surface. Mm. The great, great majority of crustaceans live in marine environments in the ocean, and that's everything from shrimp to lobster to crab. Your isopods are more closely related to a lobster than they are to an insect.
Mm-hmm. And isopods, woodlouse, whatever you want to call them, are a very, very old animal that existed on planet Earth and is one of the initial indicating animals of a strictly aquatic animal that then ventured out into terrestrial Earth, which for me is what makes it so fascinating.
Right.
They have a very close relationship with water. They need a kind of humid environment, otherwise they'll die. But clearly they ventured out into this brave new frontier for them, where they were like, our ancestors come from the ocean, we're going to go out into the land and see what we can do there. It's just fascinating evolution for that animal, you know?
Yeah. And most of their ancestors stayed in the oceans.
Right. Right.
I brought a couple little things today. I don't know if I don't know if you can see these little guys.
Oh, wait.
So these hissing are what are called hissing cockroaches.
Nice. Oh, nice.
Yeah. And they're this is the one that everybody uses in any type of movie or something
yeah.
where where they want an insect that they're going to do something with, people are going to eat, which I'd never eat one of these, right. Or they want to cover some body with something to make it look disgusting. These are the roaches that they use for the most part. Real easy to take care of. But they do make a hissing noise.
Yeah.
So
nice.
And I don't think we can, if you can hear that.
We can definitely hear it.
And that is just, and this one's just peeing all over my keyboard.
Brilliant.
Oh God.
But, yeah.
Well, Rich, this is, this is a great teaching moment, because so many people out there are extremely fearful of cockroaches, and that is generally the American and German cockroach, because obviously, you know, they're vermin and they live on your food and they can
invade the house,
breed like crazy. But the Madagascan hissing cockroach is clean, very fastidious, and doesn't pass on any germs at all, right? It's not an animal to be scared of.
Nope, nothing at all.
Nice, nice.
But it will piss on your computer.
It will piss on your computer.
Yeah, but now there's pee all over my computer. But we'll get it. Let's see if we can get this.
Oh,
so this is an Australian walking stick.
Wow.
And so this is a what they call a prickly walking stick or a spiny walking stick. Comes from Australia. Cool. It's a large animal. Wow. Again, as you can see, no danger or anything from this. In Australia, they feed mainly on kind of rosaceous, so rose and berry plants and stuff. But you'd see how this would blend in almost perfectly with an environment out there.
Yeah.
And
so
kind of this probably is probably my favorite insect.
Wow. Well, that is an absolutely beautiful animal. So we're talking to you right now from your house, right, Rich? Can you just talk us through what else you have? What other invertebrates you keep in your house or animals in general?
Yeah. Yeah, so let me grab one more here.
Okay, great. I love it. That's so good.
This is just you, though.
I know. We're going to have a specific guest for you next week because this is all me. Oh, tarantula, breaking.
Okay, so this is a Chaco golden-kneed tarantula.
Wow.
And there are hundreds of different types of tarantulas throughout the world. This one comes from kind of the Argentina area. And I've had her, it's a her. I've had her for about 8 years now.
Right.
She is very docile.
Yeah, very docile.
She has bitten, but you know, you almost have to force her to bite.
Right.
The interesting thing about tarantulas is most tarantulas are not very aggressive. Mm. And the toxin that they put in when they do bite, with a few exceptions, is not very toxic. But the most dangerous thing about many tarantulas is you can see her body's covered with a lot of hairs.
Mm-hmm.
Those hairs can be hollow, and they can contain a chemical which causes basically skin irritation.
Mm.
So the way a tarantula protects itself from a mouse or something that's about to eat it, most of the time it doesn't bite. It actually will figure out some ways to either shoot the hairs or embed those hairs, say, in the face of a mouse or some type of small mammal that wants to eat it. Mm. And it causes swelling, it causes itching, et cetera, in that animal. Mm. But she's very friendly.
Beautiful,
She's a beautiful little animal. Yeah.
Just gorgeous. Amazing in nature, all the different ways animals have for defense and everything. It's just incredible. What a great way to spend your life, I think, to do that.
Yeah, amazing, Rich.
Yeah.
Can I ask, Rich, because I did this nature show for a few years, and anytime I got bitten, I would say to my crew and certainly the audience, I made a mistake there. I did something wrong. That's the reason why this animal stung or bit or scratched me. Can you recall what happened to make your tarantula bite?
Yeah. So what happened was, I don't do this anymore, but I used to let visitors to us hold it. And so about a 14-year-old was holding it and then got really afraid and went to drop it. Wow. And so I reached as quickly as I could and grabbed it so it didn't fall to the ground, which probably would have killed it. Mm. And she just you know, she was just trying to defend whatever she could, and she bit me.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. See, it makes sense, right? You can always understand. I always think that whenever I've been in a situation where an animal has been forced to bite or sting me, if I go backwards, I can see the mistake that I've made, you know? So, well, that's fascinating. Yeah. Well, Rich, it's been amazing to have you on the show. Is there anything in particular that you want to tell us about your university, or to raise any awareness about what you do in your job specifically?
I mean, I think that, I think the one thing I've tried to do throughout my career is to convince people that, that nature is really beautiful. Those animals out there, they're contributing, they're doing things, and you know, as either an avocation, like maybe you have, Dom, or as a profession to study animal, especially insects, it is, it's been a very rewarding life.
Mm.
And so the one thing I've hoped I've been able to do is just, you mentioned this, you know, to get people when they're outside, they're sitting next to the pool or something, and they see a bunch of ants crawling up and down the wall. Well, something very, very interesting and specific is going on there. Those ants are almost blind. They're following chemicals, smells, and stuff like that. And, you know, it's so simple. You don't need necessarily elephants and tigers and bears to explain biology. You can do it with these small little critters that are all over your backyards, your gardens, et cetera. Mm. So it's just, it's a wonderful world.
I was on, we were on vacation when my son who's now almost 16, but he must have been about 5 or 6. And we went to this nice place in Portugal. And, you know, it had a swimming pool and places to hang out and swings and lots of places for kids to play. And he got obsessed with these ants on the back, just outside the back door. And for about 3 days, that's what he did. He sat out there and he watched these ants and, you know, he'd put a stick and see what they do and what happens if you do this. And then a cleaner must have came and put something down that got rid of the ants. And he was so upset, like as upset as I'd ever seen him at that point, that all these little friends had left him, you know. So I think it is that if we keep that kind of child's mentality of like, wow, look at this amazing stuff that's all around us.
Mm.
It's a great thing. A great thing that you're doing, Rich. Lovely. And can Dom come to your university?
can I come?
Maybe
and get...
Dom can get that degree after all.
We'll figure something out.
Come and get a degree from you.
There you go.
I mean, I echo what Billy said. It's fantastic to hear someone speaking from a point of passion and interest. And we do need as many people on this planet that love and respect all animals, because like you said, I mean, they're all doing incredible things for the planet of which we benefit, you know? So that's amazing to hear your message, Rich. It really is.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Rich.
It's great to talk to you, Rich.
Thank you. It was a tremendous pleasure.
Oh, cool, man.
Tremendous pleasure for me to be able to spend a few minutes with you guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Rich.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Well, Dom, that was a fantastic interview. I'm sure you'll agree.
What a lovely gentleman. And it's just amazing to hear people talk from a point of passion. So if there's anyone out there who feels passionate about something that they're doing in their life, get in touch with us. We really want to hear from you.
I'm passionate about something, Dom. I'm passionate about Billy and Dom Eat the World.
Billy and Dom Eat the World.
Oh, I brought my glasses this week.
Oh, it's very important when you're eating the world to make sure that you can read all the ingredients, etc. So, today, Dom, we are going to be eating Werther's Originals. This was sent in by someone that I've forgotten who it is and I haven't written it down, but we'll put it on somewhere. But, Dom, have you got any memory for yourself? What's the first thing you think of when you look at a Werther's Original?
William, I think it's going to be, and I don't want to steal your thunder here, but you did ask me first. I think when I try and, you know, understand the first time that Werther's Originals came into my world, it's a kind of very, very gentle, very, what's the word that I'm looking for? There's a diffused lens. Everything about
lovely.
Yeah, thank you. It's like the camera lens has like a pair of tights on the front of it, so everything looks a kind of
wait a minute, a
lovely. No, not in it, not like that. But like a kind of magic hour, lovely sunset glow. And there's a grandfather with his little grandson or granddaughter, and they're having a lovely chat. And he says, come sit next to me and we'll have a lovely Werther's Original together. That's what I think of when I think of Werther's Original. How about you?
Yeah, I think the ads were they were huge, weren't they? But there was Werther's Original long before the ads, Tom. Let me just introduce you to the world of Werther's Originals. In 1903...
Well, would you mind if I suck on one while you tell us?
All right, well, I'll suck on one while we're doing it then, because we need to suck at the same time.
Yeah, okay.
Ready?
Okay, yeah. It's going in, down the hatch.
Oh, Tom.
Oh, goodness. You know what I mean?
My God.
Incredible. Go on.
Anyway, it's like someone solidified happiness. Dom, in 1903, August Stork opened his own confectionery factory in the small town of Werther, Germany. There you are. Thank you, Sean. By 1909, he was already shipping sweets to neighborhood towns. And his workforce had grown from 3 people to 12. One of them, Gustav Nebel.
Whoa!
Gustav Nebel invented a rich caramelly offering known as butter candy, which, in addition to butter, it contained cream, sugar, brown sugar, just a dash of salt.
I'm gonna just pick up on a thing that you said there. Do you ever pick up on a dash of salt? I never pick up on a dash of salt. I can't.
Now that they've said that, I can hold on, I'll tell you if I still salt. I think I can taste there's a bit of salt in it now. Don't.
I mean, is it a dash? Is it a dash?
What's the number one ingredient without looking?
Oh, I'm sorry, I did look there. I'm sorry, but it's sugar, isn't it?
Yeah. It doesn't say salt on it.
I mean, when I was...
It does, Tom. It does.
Oh, hang on.
After
hang
butter.
On. Let me consult this. Oh, yeah, after sugarcane syrup, there's salt in there. I remember as a kid thinking, but why? Why is Werther's Original so tasty? And ultimately, if you're going to combine different types of sugar with cream and butter, it can't not be tasty, can it? I mean, that's just a given.
There's something. I like on the bag it says, keep cool and dry. You think they mean the sweets or just yourself?
Does it? Where does it say keep cool and dry? On the front?
No, across from the nutritional facts. And then there's a thing that says, Werther's Original. Caution, hard candies may be inadvertently swallowed and can cause choking. Underneath that, it says, keep cool and dry, which I think is a good mantra for life.
Yeah, it is a good mantra for life. I mean, is this the sweet, more than any other sweet that I've been exposed to in my life, that makes you feel like you want to reminisce about things? Is there something about the Werther's Original that makes you reminisce?
Is it because of that ad, or is it more than that? Let's jump from 1909 to 1969, Dom.
Oh, okay.
That's when Stork unveiled a hard caramel called the Werther's Echte, from the German word for real or genuine. True to its name, Werther's Echte was made with real cream and real butter, just like Nebel's old recipe. Werther's Echte was later rebranded as Werther's Original for the international market. And when it first showed up in the US in around late 1970, it was always associated with old people. But why?
Oh,
why old people?
I don't know. But can I just congratulate you on your German pronunciation there of the word echte. I like what you did there. It's fantastic.
Well, danke schön, Dom. Danke schön. I think you'll find that was wunderbar.
Bitte schön, mein Freund. Wunderbar, mein Freund. Would it be fair to describe this as a butterscotch? I mean, is that fair?
I think it's fair, but it's more than that, isn't it? There's something.
Well, is it?
Yeah. I always find like a Werther's original, it's almost like your mouth activates something in it. Like there's little insects in there that when a mouth gets on a Werther's original, it kind of goes, melt the butter, let it run down the tongue. And there's something very, very soothing about it, Dom. But I can see how you would choke on it. Almost choked on that one.
Well, you could choke on it because it's a hard sweet, or as they say in the United States, a hard candy, you know. But, I mean, it feels like you said, like butterscotch, but maybe a little bit more. I think that might be one of my favourite words in the English language, by the way, butterscotch. What? Isn't that just lovely? Isn't that just roll off the tongue? Butterscotch.
It's lovely, Dom.
Butterscotch. Butterscotch. I also like the word billowing. Do you have a favourite word in the English language? Billowing.
Do you think you could ever use butterscotch and billowing in the same sentence?
Oh, God. Well, billowing tends to be associated with clouds, doesn't it? And it's tough to get a butterscotch in there. But what about you? Is there any particular word in the English language where you think, oh, that's a real favourite of mine?
Chardonnay.
Oh, yeah. I know you love Chardonnay, you. Big fan. Yeah. I like, also, I think this rolls off the tongue very well. Gastrointestinal reflex. Isn't that lovely?
No, it's
just
not
say that
lovely.
Along with me. You ready?
Yeah.
Come on, try it with me. I'll do it. I'll give it to you one more time. Gastrointestinal reflex.
Gastrointestinal reflex.
Now, Billy, if you and I were sharing a room together and I was struggling to sleep and I said to you, will you do me a favour? Will you just say gastrointestinal reflex 40 or 50 times? I think I'd be lulled to sleep. You just pop a word that's originally in my mouth while I'm breathing in the right direction.
I got gastroenteritis once.
What is that? Is this like a sore digestive system?
It's right. Really bad diarrhea, Dom.
Oh, no.
And everybody in the house got it. We only had one toilet. We'd all get mussels down at a place called the Barras in Glasgow. And we got, and my sister Margaret, she had terrible diarrhea. Explosive.
Oh, I'm sorry, Margaret. Oh, gosh, golly. And I think you've told me this story before, right? You said that all avenues of opportunity were used in the bathroom to exit fluids, right? Sinks, baths, toilets, windows. I'm not sure if a window was involved.
It was like the Somme. It was awful.
What a terrible, terrible story. I'm sorry about that. Hey, I was going to talk a little bit about the advert here. I'm going to continue on with some of our blurb that we got here. When Stork, the company that makes the Werther's original, began advertising on American and British television several years later, it continued angling the gold-wrapped goodies as old-fashioned sweets.
Yeah.
But this time, it had a spokesman to help sell the concept, a grandfather. Debuting in 1989, the commercial featured an archetypal cardigan-sporting grandfather who, from a high-backed leather chair, reminisces about eating his first sweet and creamy and just plain good Werther's original. He was 4 years old and his grandfather gave it to him. So it's almost like a passing of the torch, isn't it?
That's
like,
right.
When I was your age, my granddad gave me a sweetie. I'm going to do the same for you. And that is a lovely thing.
Now, did your dad ever have, maybe your granddad, but your dad or your granddad always have a certain sweet in their pocket? You know, see my dad. If he ever had any sweets in his pocket, it was always just gum, chewing gum, little pack of that PK, I think it was called, PK chewing gum.
Oh, PK, yeah, I like that, little aniseed gum.
Yeah, and that's the only sweet he ever had. Both my grandfathers were dead, so there was no Werther's coming that way, Dom.
You've brought the mood down, if you don't mind me saying. Let me try and bring it up. My granddad didn't used to carry around sweeties that much, but he always had 10p, the old big, remember the old big 10 pence piece? I remember as a kid it being massive, it like fit in the palm of my hand. And he always had 10p for his grandchildren. So we'd come in to say hello to my grandma and granddad, and then he'd line us all up, and there'd be four or five grandkids, and he'd give us all 10p. And at that point, as I'm sure you know, 10p went a long way. You could buy a nice handful of sweets with 10p. You get nothing with 10p nowadays, Bill. Ooh, that's inflation for you.
Oh, you'll get...
And then...
What?
And then my dad's a licorice fan. But to give my dad his credit, recently he's been kind of moving more and more towards becoming diabetic. And his doctor said, listen, you got to cut it out with the sweets. So my dad has just completely cut out sugar. There's no sugary sweets. He doesn't make cakes anymore. He doesn't have sugar, you know, in any of his diet. And I commend that. I commend it. Well done, Austin. Well done.
Well, it's got to be kind of hard for me and Austin to share a tin of condensed milk now, then.
I think he'll make an exception for you. I did have a licorice also when I was at my mum and dad's recently. And I said to my dad, I'm really craving something sweet. I hope that's all right. And my dad was like, yeah, it's fine. And he said, you know what? I can have one. I can have one here and there. And he just had one. He just had the one. And I was impressed by that. Because normally once you have one licorice also, you know, you've cracked the seal. But yeah, my dad just had one.
But one did he have?
He had the sandwich, you know, the little sandwich. I'm not sure if it was the triple sandwich or the double sandwich, but it was definitely a sandwich, I think. Yeah, it was a sandwich.
If you could only pick one, what would you have?
I like the triple black and white licorice sandwich. What about you?
I would have the sandwich with the brown.
Oh, you like the brown? Yeah, you'd have to fight my mum for that. She always picks those one out. Are they kind of a chocolatey mocha
type? If it came here, I would fight your mum. I reckon I could take your mum. She's quite small.
Yeah, you probably could. She's not. She's a lover, not a fighter. I've had my second Werther's original. Well, should we give it some scores? I'm not sure what else there is to say about Werther's.
Well, there's plenty, we'll went into it quite deeply.
It's a German sweet associated with granddads. Let's give it some scores. Okay. Flavour and or taste?
Dom. I think it's a fantastic taste. I'm going to give it a 9.3.
Well, that's high. That's high for you because I think you have much higher standards than me in terms of the scoring. I'm going to give it a solid 9. I like it. It's a 9.
How does it look to you, Dom?
Well, I mean, what is not to like? It's in a lovely gold wrapper, like the setting sun. And the sweetie itself, I wonder what that indentation is about right in the middle there. Is it trying to look like a belly button or like a doorbell? Is that the idea?
I like it because I put my tongue on
there. I like it.
Like, of course you do. If I had to choose which way I'd like to suck a Werther's original, I would have it with the indentation facing downwards.
Mm-hmm. I think I would too. It allows your tongue to grip it, get some purchase. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I'm going to give that a 9.2, Tom. I think that's brilliant.
9.2. So I was just going to say that I'm astounded by how quickly I'm getting through a Werther's original. When I was a kid, I seem to remember it taking like 25 minutes to get through a Werther's original. But now, 3 or 4 minutes, it's done. I'm onto the crunching part of the experience.
Your mother did tell me once that when you were younger, you had very little saliva in your mouth, so therefore couldn't break down food. And normally you could only eat creamed rice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was an awful affliction. I've got through that now. But terrible, terrible times for the young Don Monaghan. I'm going to give it, in terms of the look, I mean, it's fantastic. What's not to love? I'm going to give it another 9. I really can't find too many faults in it. Usefulness.
Two big jugs.
I beg your pardon? Oh, okay.
See that?
Yeah, do now. Now you put it into context, I see exactly what you mean. Now, how useful is it? Can you bring... I would say, if you're feeling... You know, sometimes, I don't know if you've ever had this experience. You know, if you're on a long car journey and you're like, oh, I just feel a bit crappy and I need maybe just something to keep my digestive system going. I think it's quite useful for car journeys to make you feel better about life, you know?
But could you, here's what I'm thinking. With a pestle and mortar, maybe bought in the streets of Bangkok, could you take three or four Weathers Originals and beat it into virtually a powder, a crystalline powder, and scatter that, for instance, on the top of, say, like a Danish dream cake?
I think you absolutely could. I mean, but using that same technique, could you then, you know, mix it into an ice cream or on top of a cake?
Ice cream, Dom, you've nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
That could be the greatest thing. A vanilla ice cream, not too sweet.
Yeah, not too sweet. Creamy buttery ice cream, and maybe you put a little bit of sea salt on top as well.
For that alone, I'm going to give it a 9.5 for usefulness, because I think that's going to make us rich making that ice cream.
Yeah. My goodness, this is one of the highest scoring things ever. And I wonder if it's because you and I are slowly creeping towards being grandfathers. I wonder if that's what it is. Do you know what I mean?
It could well.
You know what? It could be. Just to keep it succinct and kind of cool looking, I'm going to give it another 9. So it's 999 for me. Don't call the emergency services. Well, what a treat. That was Werther's Original. Fantastic.
If you've never had a Werther's Original, get one in your gob. They're fantastic.
Get one. Yeah, go find one. They're found all over Europe and the United States, and I'm sure in a bunch of other countries as well. But it goes without saying that if there's something in your life that you enjoy eating, maybe you don't know if Billy and I have experienced it ourselves, maybe something you've grown up with, maybe something that your parents gave you when you were a kid, a curiosity in the culinary world, send us your suggestions. We would love to have it on Billy and Dom Eat the World.
I'm going to eat the rest of them.
All right, cool.
Lovely.
Yeah. Well, I think we might have run out of time, Bills, because we Rich was such an amazing guest, so we might have to say see you anon. I'm going to see you in Calgary this weekend, which will be super exciting.
Very excited to see you there, Dom. I will. The time difference means that I'm absolutely starving now. I just did about 14 Weathers Originals. So I'm going to nip out, grab something to eat and get to bed. And I'll see you in a couple of days. And we'll be back in the studio next week, I hope.
Sounds good, Billy. And of course, if you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email at thefriendshipbunion@castmedia.com. That's cast with a K. Or you could leave us a voice note at speakpipe.com/thefriendshiponion. Leave all your comments on our YouTube channel. And then what's the other thing? Oh, go to subscribe. Subscribe.
It's get your friends to subscribe. Everybody subscribe and rate. And if you want to be one of the coolest people in all of Christendom, then I would say buy some T-shirts or a hoodie or something that's got the Friendship Onion on it and let people know that you listen.
Yeah, and Billy and I are doing quite a few conventions over the next few months here all over the United States and Canada. And if we see you in Friendship Onion merchandise, we would be more than happy to take pictures with you and say, yay, you listen to the Friendship Onion. So get it out there, represent.
I love it.
Cool, guys. Bills, I'll see you at the weekend. And friends, we'll see you all next week.
Bye-bye.
Toodles.
Harmonize with me and hold me tight all through the night. You're shining bright, I'm your oyster, baby, you're my pearl.